In ancient times, the land lay covered in forests, where from ages long past dwelt the spirits of the gods.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to the Dragonreel podcast. This is episode 27, where we're going to talk about Princess Mononoke. Cut off my head, and I still have the power to bite. I'm Chris, but please don't cut off my head. In share number two, I hate her, I hate her, I hate her, I hate her. Ooh, pretty. It's Sharon.
Wait a minute. They can't see me, so they don't know.
Trust me on this.
Okay.
In share number three, he sees with eyes unclouded by hate. It's Pete.
Nice one. Thank you.
Right?
Right. Good call.
And in chair number four, it's that greedy monk, noted and acclaimed world-renowned author, Bill William Ray. That greedy monk?
That's right. You know, I feel like if I'm going to sit around meditating and praying for the good of all mankind, I should get a little something.
There you just go. A little something, yeah.
And you might
I give
as well
up. There's no use arguing with you fools.
There you go.
All right, I'm calling him Bill today.
Okay, call him Bill today.
I am, because that's fair enough. You know, what I call him in the house, so it'll be easier that way.
Yeah, so we're going to do Princess Mononoke from 1997, but we're doing specifically the English dub, because there are some slight differences, at least in the terminology.
Oh. Whoops.
Did you watch the Japanese dub, the Japanese one?
Yeah, that's the only one that I have.
The subtitles? Okay.
Yes.
You don't have an English track on it?
No.
I'm astonished, sir.
It was a $3 DVD.
Wow, okay.
Back in the day. So it only ever had the Japanese track. And I think that's it has fine. A Chinese track.
Well, you know, in the beauty of the all-Japanese version is none of it goes to Harvey Weinstein. So
true, there you go. So.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I noticed when we were watching when I was reading through the credits. It's a Miramax distribution film, which means that... probably Harvey Weinstein had sex with all of the women in this cast.
Oy.
Oh my god.
Well, now that you completely ruined it for me.
Yeah, depressing.
Yeah.
So the English dub features Dr. Manhattan as Ashitaka and Billy Bob Thornton, who gets second billing for Jigo. And I don't know why, because Jigo's fairly minor part.
Yes, but Billy Bob Thornton was not at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. And Claire Danes plays San. Those are the main two. And for some reason, they did a re-release a few years ago, and those two voices were redubbed, and nobody else was.
Huh.
Yeah.
And who did the redub on those voices?
Chris Pine, who, in my opinion, makes everything worse.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and, Chris hates Chris
and,
Pine.
And Olivia Wilde, I believe, did San.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Also a person with the kiss of death when it comes to...
Oh, yeah, you think?
Oh, yeah.
The only thing I've seen her in is House, so I wouldn't know.
Let's see here. Tron Legacy.
Okay.
The Burt Wonderstone movie.
I like how you say Legacy.
Trying to think what else. No, there have been a few. I mean, I don't think that she's necessarily a bad actor. I think she's just like Lori Petty. She basically kind of plays more or less herself, and her presence is the kiss of death on a movie, so... Mm-hmm.
I can kind of understand why Claire Danes was redubbed, because I really don't think she delivers a great performance in here. But we'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to that. Who wants to summarize the movie? Shall I go?
Go ahead, Chris.
It's
why don't you summarize the movie?
It's really complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated.
There's
how
like
are you gonna do it?
Several different factions. And so there's an Iron Town, and there's a samurai, and there's a local daimyo. And there's Ashitaka, and then there's the wolves, and then there's the boars. There's like five armies?
There's a lot of traveling.
Well, there's also the apes, don't forget. And
yeah,
there's the
apes. There's so many different factions in this movie. It's kind of like Deadwood, where like everybody really has their own motivation, and the whole story is about what happens when they all come together.
I think ultimately what it comes down to is that it's a huge commentary on industrialist hubris.
I'll go along with that.
Yeah.
A lot of the installation and spread of the Iron Town kind of reminded me of Saruman's corruption of Isengard.
Fair enough.
I also thought it was a movie about perception, because the person, it depends whose eyes you're watching it through. So, okay. In other words, if you're very much into the environment, I think that you'd want the forest to win. I mean, don't you think? Or if you were,
yeah, because there's not really a clear good guy per
there's
se.
There's not,
right? And there's just a whole bunch of bad guys,
right?
There's not. There's not. Really
I disagree. I'd go the other way. I'd say there's not really a clear bad guy, but everybody who wants to, you know, further their own ends, and sometimes those ends are selfish, and sometimes they're not.
It's kind of
good, bad. Everybody's righteous, dude.
Yeah. So I mean, and maybe if you were more of a business owner, you might say, "What's wrong with Iron Town?"
Mm-hmm.
So
well, Ashitaka didn't think there was anything wrong with Iron Town. He's going to help rebuild it.
Well, he wanted them to live together in peace.
Well, right. Iron Town was not simply a madcap capitalist enterprise either. Iron Town was a refuge for outcasts from all the surrounding countryside.
Right.
It was a town where the economy was run by women who had been forced into prostitution and escaped. And it was a town where they were taking lepers who were outcasts from everywhere else and having them develop and add their own engineering expertise to everything else going on. So even the baddest of the bad guys weren't that bad. The only one that was just sort of not, there wasn't anything good about was Asano, the samurai, but he's not even in the movie. So we don't know what
he's a force propelling the samurai that are attacking, but he's not there himself.
And that's why this movie is hard to summarize.
Why would he be? You don't want to get shot. I mean, come on.
Someone could get hurt.
So I think we did the job, sort of summarizing.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. So who, I mean, the only person who I really couldn't sympathize very much with at all was Jigo. Because really he was just there for the money.
But some people are there for the money. So people that are like that would watch it and go, hey, he was just trying to make a buck.
Right, I don't think he was evil.
He might be considered to have the purest motivation, honestly.
Well, yeah, I guess. I would say he's the chaotic neutral.
There you go.
If you put it in D&D terms, sure.
Yeah. I mean, because he's... Well, I don't know. Maybe he's even a lawful evil or a lawful neutral.
I was just thinking of him grabbing onto the box that the head's in and rolling down the hill. Mm-hmm. And then finding his little island of stone and going, surrounded. I'm trapped.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a very deep movie. When Chris said we were going to watch anime, I always fear anime for some reason. I don't know why that is, but...
Well, to be fair, it fears you too. So, I mean, it's
it's more afraid of you than you are of it.
It's true.
This was seriously complex.
This being a Miyazaki film, I mean, he's famous for making these great, sweeping, epic films, and... I've only seen like two of them now, including this. Yeah, I've seen this and Totoro.
Oh, wow.
So
I think I've seen all Miyazaki's works except for The Borrower Eddie Arrietty.
We'll have to watch more.
Yeah, I mean, I have like this 40-film Miyazaki collection.
Oh, wow.
Hey, there was a blind character in this.
Yes.
There was.
Yeah, I like that.
Makoto.
And he wasn't a great samurai. He was a boar.
It was a giant boar.
It was a giant boar, almost.
Yes.
I'm a little confused.
One might say that the blind character in this was a huge boar.
Oh, my gosh, Pete. That was really bad.
You can show yourself out, son.
So I didn't quite understand.
I answered that even though I left. I'm not proud of that.
I didn't quite understand the concept of demons versus...
Spirits?
Well, because I don't know a lot about Japanese culture, so maybe one of you guys, I know you guys are all going to show off because all of you, I mean, Bill, you lived in Japan, and Chris studies the language, and Pete, I know a lot about samurais, and are spirits
well, I
the same?
Well, I also studied the language, and I was, admittedly, I didn't live there, but I did visit Japan very briefly. So.
Oh, wow. So are demons the same as spirits? And then at one point, he says, demon or god, you know, please don't attack our village. And I was thinking, I don't really know the difference between demon spirits or gods. So did he think that was really going to stop the creature from?
Well, I think he wanted to stop it. I think he wanted to appeal to its intelligence, its awareness, because he didn't know.
Right.
And I think there's like a reverence in
Shintoism.
In the folklore and in Shinto tradition that, mm-hmm. you know, everything has a spirit. And if you appeal to the spirit, you could, you know, somehow...
You could sway it.
Get your way,
make it stop. Maybe, possibly.
Bill, do you want to chime in, or...?
Oh, I'm not sure it's as complicated as that. That they, as Chris said, it's an animistic tradition. So there are lots of spirits, and there are lots of different kinds of spirits, and the English words for them are not necessarily great matchups.
Oh. Okay.
And so when they say, you know, gods, demons, or spirit, what they're really saying are three different things in Japanese, which we don't really have words for. And they're just kind of putting them in the best English we can get.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And kind of the concept is that if you have, if there is a living thing that has obviously a spirit, there is a kind of guiding spirit, a king spirit or queen spirit, you know, that sort of oversees everything else, which is why Nago was kind of the active leader of the boars. You know, Moro mm-hmm. was the leader of the wolves, things like that. So... You know, there's a great spirit for every spirit,
mm-hmm.
every kind of spirit.
So sometimes they could be benevolent or evil or a mixture?
It's not so much a matter of evil. It's a matter of emotion. So a lot of stuff is based on things like hatred and anger and pain and fear.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when they become quote-unquote demons, which, again, it's not they're not oni like traditional Japanese demons. They're spirits that have turned their hearts to hate, basically. They've become creatures of corruption and destruction rather than benevolence and life.
That's seriously deep.
So another thing Sharon and I noticed during the film was that Ashitaka always warned somebody to go away before he attacked.
Hey, I said that. I thought that was... I kept saying that to Chris. That I thought that was very noble that he would do that, and he would just say... stop, or I'm going to attack you, or some kind of warning.
So you guys better back off, because I'll kill you.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, they wouldn't, and then he would. So.
One of my favorite examples of that is when he's being chased by the four samurai towards the end, and he takes the two that were branching off to kind of pincer him in. He takes the head off with one shot, and the other one just kind of turns his horse and rides away.
Yep.
Thinking, oh shoot, he got away. I couldn't find him.
his second archery decapitation of the film, by the way.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you told me that happened earlier.
Yeah,
it does. When he's saving Jigo, as a matter of fact.
Yes. And it seemed weird to me, and then I realized, oh, then it also seems weird to the character, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And it's not it's something unique to him once he gets that the magic arm.
Right.
Once he gets the curse, he wasn't doing it before.
Right.
And no one else does that. So no one else gets beheaded or chops off limbs with an arrow. That seems to be something related to his, you know, infection.
Powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he does that double back bend on the sword.
Yes.
As well with his cursed arm.
Have you gentlemen seen this movie many times before? Because this is the first time I saw it.
First time for me, too.
It's the first time for you. Okay.
First time for nobody else, right?
Okay.
No, well, I saw it in 1997 when it came out in theaters in the U.S., and that was the only other time I've seen it.
Were there a lot of people in the theaters when you saw it, Bill?
No. Okay. No. In fact, it was mostly just me and like four or five other people, and towards the end my father was thought I had gotten lost, and so he came to the theater to see if he could figure out where I had gone, because apparently the movie was way longer than he thought it should be.
Yeah, it's actually one of the trivia points.
He came in at the end.
How long can it be?
Right.
Yeah, one of the trivia points on IMDb says this is the fourth longest animated feature film.
How long was it?
It was 2 hours 15 minutes, or 2 hours 13 minutes.
Okay.
And the other three are also Japanese.
All right, I'm going to admit now that we watched it in
we had to break it up.
Two separate sittings. You know, it's a lot, because Chris has to narrate the action for me.
And there's not a lot to narrate, so there's a lot of the time when, you know, like in that point where San was pulling Ashitaka across the water... I said that, and then, like, I didn't say anything else for five more minutes.
Right, exactly.
So I'm sort of wondering. Oh,
so,
okay,
so what's going on, Chris?
I said, Chris, what's happening? And he explained. She's still pulling him across the water. Like, right, how does it take to pull someone across the water?
I mean, I've seen this twice. The first time I saw it was in, before this viewing, it's three times total now. But the first time that I saw it, there were more people there, but I think it was also opening weekend.
Okay. In English,
and it was kind of a big deal because at that point in time, the Pixar guys had started to bring Miyazaki stuff.
Okay.
You know, had talked about what big fans of Miyazaki. I remember specifically because I worked in a video store, and Totoro and Nausicaa and a bunch of the other ones that he did were flying off the shelves because of the Pixar, because of John Lasseter and
I had not folks heard like of that, Miyazaki so. Until Spirited Away came out.
Gotcha.
And I still haven't seen that one either.
Really?
It's another one. You know, I have it downstairs.
Oh.
A kind of funny thing that happened is a couple of friends were talking about Spirited Away, and I was joining the conversation, and I was talking about it and trying to make intelligent points, and after the conversation, I realized I was talking about Final Fantasy The Spirit Within. So then I realized that when they kind of looked at me and the conversation stopped and they went, yeah, so anyway...
sorry, Chris.
That was because I was talking about the wrong movie.
Exactly.
That can happen.
No, not really.
Well, I was trying to be nice to my husband.
Oh, sorry.
There.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. But yeah, that could happen.
So I thought Princess Mononoke was a person, but apparently not.
Well, it's not a real name. You know, it's just a title that Lady Eboshi calls her.
Right.
Right.
Like one time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she says it like she always calls her that. It's like she's trying to get it to catch on. It's like Princess Mononoke is not going to happen.
Stop trying to make fetch happen.
Right.
I wanted to bring Yar back. Like my, she was Yar. Chris said no.
Stop bringing Yar back.
It's not going to work. So
no, because also lately Yar has been appropriated by the more pirated minded people, you know.
Really?
That you yell out before you, you know, take action.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
I meant it in a Catherine Hepburn sort of way, but
no, I dig it.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying.
Oh, cool.
So let's talk about the English dub.
I like the voices.
Just for a second. The voices were mostly good.
Yeah.
They weren't really hammy like a lot of dubs are.
Okay.
They were natural.
And the script was written by Neil Gaiman.
No.
It was.
I love Neil Gaiman.
So the English version.
The English dub script, yes.
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 Okay. Although, we're all on the same page now. I did read that they liked the Neil Gaiman version so much that they then later re-imported the English version to Japan with subtitles.
Wow.
Neat.
So I had the English dub on, and I also had subtitles on. And so I could see the literal translation from the Japanese, and I could also hear the Neil Gaiman written dialogue.
Gotcha.
And I only heard the dialogue.
Not a great deal of difference. I mean, you know, small ones.
Mm-hmm.
There were things in it, though, that I thought were... I don't want to say... I don't know a lot about the Japanese culture, so there was a part where she was chewing the food.
That's not Japanese culture, that's animal culture.
That's animal culture.
Yeah,
okay.
She's masticating.
Okay. When San chewed the food for him, and I thought, oh, maybe this is like a Japanese thing?
No, she was raised as an animal, so it doesn't mean anything to her to chew the food and then pass
and then
it,
give
to,
it
him.
To him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just thought that was... You don't see that in a lot of...
When she mama birds it? Wah, wah, wah.
I don't know. I just, it was kind of like, I didn't know what to think of that part. I didn't know whether to think, is this supposed to be sort of a romantic thing? Is this supposed to be, because it seemed like the two of them were starting to become romantic.
Which made me feel bad for the girl that Ashitaka left behind.
Oh, that
I
was
thought
his
that
sister.
Was his sister.
Oh, was that his sister?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I never got that.
I was never clear on that.
Yeah,
I thought she was his local girlfriend.
I thought so, too.
I think she explicitly called him her brother.
Okay.
Oh, well, again, difference between the subtitled version and the English language dub version. So
she gave him the necklace, and then he gave it to San. So it's kind of like
right.
I think they were siblings, but that's
if they're siblings, that makes better sense to me. But still, it's just kind of like that's
okay.
Well, I mean, he couldn't go back because for some reason the village
they'd exiled.
The oracle said, "You're dead to us forever."
Right. Yeah, we can't watch
go. Is that what she said?
Her dose.
Yeah, she said this here.
Our laws forbid us from watching you go, Ashitaka. Whatever comes to pass now, you are dead to us forever.
So yeah. That's
whoa.
That's kind of a harsh law.
That's
I mean,
pretty.
Plus, you don't really expect that many people to sit shiva in Japan.
Yeah. I just would think that the Amishi are like so dwindling, and they want their last prince to go off into exile and be dead forever. You'd think he could file for a waiver,
or something.
For a waiver.
Or something.
But,
it just
maybe he could get just get a mulligan in this one. I just don't know.
Right. Or hey, I'm the prince. I make the laws.
Well,
that'd always be fun.
His personality didn't seem to be like that. He was kind of mellow. I mean, even though he was infected by evil, he was still trying to be the peacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
That was his job throughout this whole...
Any other genre, he'd be a superhero.
Oh, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, he was very... when you're talking about alignments earlier, I would definitely say Superman-ish. Like, very...
Oh, he's definitely the lawful good.
Lawful good, yeah. That I was thinking.
And San is definitely the chaotic good.
Yeah, okay.
So,
it's hard to say.
So she was left in the forest as a baby, but raised by the forest wolves.
By wolves.
Raised by wolves.
But she could speak English.
Which is not as cool as being raised by bears, but still.
Right.
Yeah, raised by bears is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. In some ways, this movie has it all. It has a love story. It has... fighting. It's got the
supernatural
element. Supernatural mm-hmm. elements.
It's got those adorable Kodama.
Yeah, were they adorable? I couldn't see it.
They were. They had that little shaker head that they... The little rattle head that they had.
Yeah, Chris said they were rattling their heads.
They're adorable. Yeah.
They were pretty adorable. I'd like to get a couple for the house.
I wonder if they made toys for this movie. Like, I wonder if in Japan they have a lot of...
I don't know.
Toys.
Bill, did you see any merchandising when you were there?
Well, I was there in, 2011, so
way later
Princess Mononoke was kind of long come and gone by then.
Yeah.
We had a lot of One Piece merchandising.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, but, I mean, it would be interesting to just look on the web and see if we can...
I'm sure you could find something, and a lot of those... A lot of those creatures and imagery were repeated in dozens of things since then. Avatar, actually, The Last Airbender, had a ton of visual references to, particularly with the spirits in the spirit world, to what was shown in Mononoke. They really adopted a lot of the Miyazaki style.
Apparently the latest Legend of Zelda game, Link wears Ashitaka's color palette.
Oh, fun. That's a nice nod.
Yeah. Let's talk about the factions.
Okay.
Ashitaka was kind of like he was kind of like a free agent, right?
Right. Man unto himself.
Right. I mean, he didn't really have an obligation to any of those people, and he was trying to make it so that everybody was happy.
Yeah.
At least that everybody wasn't as fighty.
Right.
He wanted the forest people and the industrial people to
So the
live
forest
in harmony.
People wanted to take back Irontown. They wanted to take back that hill.
They wanted to regrow the forest.
But within the nature faction, there were sub-factions because the wolves were content to wait and the boars wanted to take it back right away.
What about the apes, too?
And the apes wanted to just eat people.
Yeah.
They didn't want to just eat people. They wanted to reforest.
But they thought
that the best way to reforest was to consume Ashitaka for his strength, and then that would allow them to reforest.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when San said... You can't, that eating people isn't going to, it was almost like she was telling them that they knew it. So I don't know whether they
So we as the viewer in that exchange don't know if it's true or not.
It's true. I'm going to go with the apes on this one because she's still kind of young. I think they know what they're talking about.
You think?
Oh, see, now,
I think they're on board with that.
I took it the opposite way. Like they were just being silly boys. Like, they didn't know what they were talking about. Like,
nah, I think they knew what they were talking about. They're apes.
So give them the power of man's red flower. They can be just like you.
Right.
Exactly.
So which one of them, which animal faction was best animal faction?
By what criteria?
I don't know. Who would have won the war if they were in charge?
Oh.
Well, the Great Tree Spirit was in charge.
Great Tree Spirit was pretty placid, actually.
Yeah, but he wanted them to live in harmony, so you can't really pick a best one. Ah, so there.
And he did win in the end, so.
It's true.
Yeah, and he got his head back.
Yeah, the deer god wins in the end.
But yeah.
Freaking deer god.
But he fell.
He won, but they're going to rebuild Irontown. So did he really win?
But she said they were going to make it better.
But he won by reforesting that whole area.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
And also curing the lepers.
Exactly.
Did he?
And the curses on San and
Yes, he did
Ashitaka.
Cure the curses, yeah.
Oh, were the lepers
cured? That was a pretty sporting move for a guy who was on the way out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was the whole thing. I mean, the whole thing behind the deer god was that it was, you know, he both a life bringer and life taker. So kind of apex forest or, you know, nature deity going on there. So
yeah, they even really they showed that very, very well visually, because when he was walking, you would see him step, and where he stepped, the flowers would spring up.
Right.
And then when he stepped away, the flowers would all die again.
Right.
So there was this
Chris,
sense of a cycle that accompanied
Chris didn't
him as he moved.
Describe the dying part.
I didn't notice that they died when
he
stepped away.
Oh, that's totally. And the other thing, of course, is that he never sank. He never broke the surface tension of water.
Oh, really? Then how did that footprint get on the waterbed, on the riverbed?
Which scene is that?
Ashitaka gets to the sacred grove, right? When he's carrying the guys back to Irontown, he gets to the, you know, the Kodama's lead him.
Okay.
See a footprint.
And he looks in the water, and there's like a three-toed footprint on the bottom
of
the water.
Right, but if you look at every other time that he appears, he doesn't break the surface tension.
Oh, I noticed that.
Yeah.
Except when he's shot.
Yeah.
Well, he dips down a little bit when he gets shot.
Right.
But then he gets better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, those parts of him reach out to find his head.
So maybe he got shot earlier.
That could be.
So, as we said earlier, I was trying to figure out who the bad guy was. I don't know if that's...
Well, let's move on to the next faction, right? We've talked about Ashitaka, and we've talked about the
nature. Well, hold on
faction.
A second. Let's answer the question first. I think that ultimately, if the Kodama were in charge, they would have won.
Just by being cute and rattling their heads around?
They would have had everybody just completely kawaii out on them. get the big weepy eyes.
And be like, oh, look at those.
Oh, my God, they're so cute. And then wham, that would be it. They would have swarmed them.
Maybe they could team up with the apes.
It would have been like that scene from the Stephen King movie with all the cockroaches. It was an anthology one. It's the one that he's actually in, and he finds the meteor that's got the green
Creep
stuff
show.
On it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, the cockroach scene from Creepshow.
I couldn't watch it, honestly.
Too creepy?
Yeah. Actually, right. Our friend Ron had to leave the room.
Yeah, I did too.
When the scene came out, he's like, "Oh God!" And he's gone.
Yeah, I could probably do it now, but I couldn't do it then.
Disgusting.
Oh yeah.
So anyway, so there's, you know, the best faction is.
I asked that question, but I don't really
is
think
Kodama there, faction.
I don't really think there is a bad guy as such. It's
I think the bad guy is the emperor who wants the head of the nature spirit.
I was thinking that too, but if we would have seen him, we might. I mean, if we would have saw his point of view, then we would have. Gone, okay, he's not really the bad guy either.
I had a little bit of a hard time understanding Jigo's relationship to Eboshi. He had supplied her with firearms, but she was making firearms, so what was he really supplying
maybe
her
in
with?
The beginning, he was
maybe
like
he was the
benefactor.
Flamethrower guy?
The what?
The flamethrower guy?
Hmm.
Maybe he was the one who provided that kind of that like short burst flamethrower effect rather than the rifles?
Mm-hmm. It could be. The little dragon cannon thing.
Somebody
yeah.
would have had to have backed her in the beginning. I think the implication is there that they were friends for a while, or maybe.
Well, I don't know if
they
were friends or
friends,
friends
as
per se,
such,
but
per
yeah,
se,
business associates,
business partners. She had this great idea. He approved it, and lent her some rifles or something.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the complexity of the story. Is really nice because it's not a kid's story. There's no clear black and white on this. There's a lot of, I mean, there's Jigo, who's motivated by greed and, you know, personal reasons. There's Eboshi, who,
she's,
you know,
motivated by ambition, but I don't think it's the same as greed.
But she had a lot of depth to her character.
I think she did.
She did a lot of relatively good things. Like Bill said, she employed lepers and brought in the prostitutes and the, you know.
Yeah. Now, was it benevolent of her, or was it selfish of her because she could get them for cheap labor and give them a niche in a society?
I don't know, because they really admired her.
And basically get them on the
cheap. And she tended to, like, hang with them, too. You know, I don't think she was.
I don't think she had
that kind of...
Yeah,
I know.
Held it over their head or anything like that, or forced
them. Exactly.
No, I don't think so, because they...
She was approachable.
Yeah, she was approachable, and they loved her. You could see it in the film that they were seriously worried about her, and they relied upon her, too, for leadership. You know, sort of like... I'm trying to think. Like you would towards somebody, to a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
Like Caesar or...
It's kind of...
Napoleon.
It kind of makes me wonder where she came from, that she had the, you know, the capital to start this up.
That's why I said I think the monk
helped her. Like Jigo might have been in part of that group.
It could be, but it seemed like, you know, like I said, it seemed like their relationship was equal, and I don't know if she owed him anything after their initial...
So that should be another movie, is her backstory. Like,
yeah, her backstory could be another
because
movie.
Because she was so interesting that you're like, I want to know more about her.
I really did, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a good... Mm-hmm. That's an interesting character when you want to know more about her.
Oh, definitely.
Like you want to know more about the characters in Bill's books.
There are a lot of even the minor characters you feel that way about them, you know,
Toki.
Yeah.
Her second in the Iron Village.
Yeah, or I'm drawing a blank on this guy's name, the guy with the kind of hourglass shaped head with the little thin mustache.
Yeah, the one her Darth Vader.
It's the one that that Ashitaka carries back.
Gonza,
thank you. Yes. God. So Gonza, I want to know more about him and their relationship. I want to know what goes on between Toki and Gonza, kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, Toki's husband was something with a K. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Kuroku.
Yes, that was it.
Right.
Yeah.
I wanted to know more about the god bear, the lead. Bear, and I can't... Not bear. I mean...
Lead bear.
No.
The deer god?
Not the deer. I'm
the
sorry. No, not the wolf. There's only...
Bigger than
the boar. The boar. The boar.
Oh, the
boar.
Nago?
Yeah, the
Nago
blind
or
boy.
Otako?
Okoto.
Both of
Okoto.
Them.
Okoto, sorry.
The original evil one. How did he turn evil? That would be a whole... Another
well,
story.
Well, we know. We know how he turned evil.
Well, because he was shot, right?
Right, but the pain and the hatred drove him to become possessed.
Because of them taking the forest.
Well, because also the fact that it had apparently bored into the center of his being, and the iron was poisoning him as well.
Okay.
So there were all these different little factors.
See, but I still would like to see that story too. So that means I really liked the characters.
So
yeah, what we need is a prequel, something that shows like the first the 72 hours prior to Princess Mononoke. Okay.
They could have done it all in flashback. We needed another hour and a half on this movie, is what
you
said.
No, I don't think so. I liked it, you know. Remember, we still had to do it in two sittings, and you can't do that in the theater.
We did break it up, and I gotta say, it's not the most action-packed movie in the world.
It was for the second part.
But it's also, I mean, I gotta say, again, just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry for this to do this to you, Sharon, but the visual storytelling in this is just amazing.
That's what Chris was saying. I don't mind. Yeah,
sumptuous, and it's very satisfying. And admittedly, the pacing is very, very slow, but it tells a lot
through
by
pictures,
saying nothing.
Through,
yeah,
through
by saying
sight.
Nothing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of lingering shots.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's some very impressive artistry. It was all done by hand, and I mean, I think there were like 140,000 frames or something like that.
Right.
They said Miyazaki personally oversaw each and every frame of it.
Sweet mother of God! This is like
only...
Nick Park doing his stop motion stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
I saw
and the only
set,
computers.
Yeah.
The only computers he used were in... they had the sequences where he had his... the curse was growing on his arm, and he had kind of the the squirmy worm effect on his arm.
Yeah.
That's it.
And even that. What they used it for?
Yeah, and even that, they still went over and hand colored it. They just used the computer rendering to help stylize the animation for it. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing was done done by hand.
Right. I saw another statistic that he had corrected or done something on 80,000 frames himself.
Yeah, I mean that's exhausting just thinking about. So we had a hard time.
Wasn't a young man then,
Yeah.
Well, he was in his 50s for this.
And I'm interested to know how things look visually. So please don't feel bad about mentioning the visual aspects, mm-hmm. Pete.
There were a lot of really really great looking landscape paintings.
Mm-hmm.
That were just really amazing to look at.
But there are also some great moments. There were some great moments where you have Ashitaka approaching an area or coming up onto something, and he stops, and the way that they do the quote-unquote camera work is you basically come up over his shoulder and see what he's seeing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. There are these just amazing landscapes. You see the fire, and everything informs Ashitaka's kind of sense of urgency. And things like that, it's just really, it's really quite amazing. While he's traveling through carrying wounded men and all the little Kodama are coming out, and stuff like that. It's just, there are just so many, little things in there that visually inform what's going on in the story.
What he's feeling.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what you mean, what he's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
What he's feeling and thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, it provides also a sense of, sometimes it provides a sense of urgency, sometimes it provides, a sense of struggle, things like that. He was
sadness.
Working his way over tree roots and stuff like that, carrying basically two guys on his back,
Yeah.
Well, and things like that, so.
Pete, since I couldn't see this, what about the ending? Even not seeing it, it sounded very powerful to me where when things were starting to grow back at the end, mm-hmm. is what I'm talking
yes.
about. Was that...
It grows back?
Well, I was crying because I thought it sounded beautiful that everything was then covered with flowers.
It's lovely. It's really, really lovely because everything kind of... When the deer god goes over and essentially explodes,
mm-hmm.
He takes a huge chunk of Irontown with it.
Right.
And wherever it lands, suddenly it just starts to turn green, mm-hmm. and all these sprouts come out,
mm-hmm.
and even the ruin of the town gets covered in this lush growth.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's, and everything is restored, everything is renewed by his passing, and I think that's kind of like his whole shtick. I think that's the Deer God shtick, is that mm-hmm. it's all about renewal. It's all about, like Bill said, that kind of constant cycle.
Yeah. I'm glad it ended the way it did, because I was getting really sad during the movie, and I'm like, oh, everyone's going to die. I'm like, why am I watching this? And
everyone loses.
Yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen. So I'm really glad that it didn't go.
I mean,
that
everyone
direction.
Did kind of lose a bit,
Well, there's also some really great shocking moments, like when Ashitaka comes up onto the where the boar fight happened.
Uh-huh.
And there are those lines of bodies with the tatami over them.
Yeah,
right.
And the one guy who's crouched down on his, on his haunches with his face in his hands.
Yeah.
And it's just such a great moment. And then just between the middle of this thing, there's that single, rake. Mm-hmm. Between it, it's like these guys are farmers.
Yeah.
These guys were farmers and they died soldiers. They shouldn't have been there, kind of thing. So. Mm-hmm.
So when I was going through the lines for clips, something struck me as kind of a strange plot point, and it was that if Jigo didn't tell Ashitaka where to go to try to find the nature spirit, would much of the rest of this have happened? So like Jigo says this right here.
There's a place high in the mountains, far to the west of here. It's where the spirit of the forest dwells, and it's a very dangerous place for humans. To enter there is certain death.
The spirit of the forest?
I've been told the beasts there are all giants, just as they were in the dawn of time.
So that's part of the, the thing that propels Ashitaka to go there to try to get healed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of wonder what would, what was Jigo serving by telling him to do that?
Good point.
I think he needed a dupe to be able to locate the pond.
Okay. I'll go along with that.
I think that's what his motivation was.
Yeah, that was my impression as well. He was sending Ashitaka to sort of stir up the trouble that was already going on there and help him sort of hone in on where the forest spirit was.
Right.
Okay, I'll go along with that. Thank you for clearing that up.
So he was a user.
Yeah.
That was what.
There are a lot of little moments of manipulation throughout this film.
Mm-hmm.
From everybody, even creatures like Moro and stuff like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's just one of my favorite bits is when Eboshi is talking to Yoki and she says, you know, I'm trusting Iron Town to you guys because they can't trust the men.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that too.
You know, that kind of thing. So, but she's obviously, you know.
I liked when San was talking to the was it red? His animal companion?
Yakul?
Yeah, Yakul. And he said, how did you know his name? And she said, he told me.
He told me all about your village.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I loved that scene.
Apparently
you know
the Amishi was a real thing.
I loved that scene.
Hmm.
There were little things that I see little scenes in there that I just loved. Like when the women were sort of teasing the men in Iron Village. I also like when he was getting healed in the water. And that was sort of visual, and Chris explained that to me, and I understood it. So,
mm-hmm.
But like the healing properties of the forest and the water, and mm-hmm. I guess I'd be on the nature side.
Mm-hmm. I think the only people you couldn't really sympathize with were Asano. Was that his name?
Yeah. The samurai.
The samurai, the local samurai, and maybe Jiko. But, you know, he was still enjoyable to watch, Jiko was.
Well, you know, you kind of always need that sort of Picaro element also.
Yeah.
Because he acts as the foil to propel the story.
Yeah.
So.
And in the end, he's just like, well, you know, he doesn't even seem that miffed,
right.
You know, like.
Oh, well.
You know, I tried.
I was going to be really, really rich, but it didn't work out. So
I'm
going to
find another scheme. I mean, that was the impression I got anyway. Like,
and I think that's pretty much what it comes down to. He's going to find another scheme.
He's the only one who walks out of the movie the same way he walked in.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't change at all.
Yeah.
It's like.
So what is that character? What is the one who is unchanged? What is that? That's got to be a thing.
He's considered a flat character since he didn't develop, but he's also, like I said, he's the Picaro. He's the lovable rogue.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend not to develop. I mean, there are some differences like Han Solo and people like that, but
mm-hmm.
for the most part, the Picaro stays essentially true to his or her nature throughout the story.
Okay, fair enough. So what was your favorite part, Sharon?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that next, and I think I kind of mentioned it a bit. I like the scene between the forest mother and the main character.
You mean Moro?
Yes.
And yeah, really Ashitaka?
And Ashitaka, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the scene where he said he knew that he was going to die. And that everything he was doing was because he had to. And she basically said, okay, I get that, I understand. But if you come back here, I'm going to kill you.
I'll have to kill you.
I'll have to kill you.
I'll find you and I'll kill you.
So, but, and then she talks to the daughter. I think that whole long scene. So I guess she's in both scenes, but mm-hmm. with different people. And then the daughter, when she's telling the forest mother that she has to go and help the boars, because she just had the sense of duty, like that. I said duty, but that she.
I'm glad you said it.
That she had to help the boar lord. He's that's the other scene I like with the. Well, you did ask me.
I did ask you for one.
The other scene that I liked. There always has to be two. Okay. When the boar was
always
tricked.
Two.
When he couldn't smell, I don't know, because being blind, I understood that he smelled.
With the boar skins?
Yeah, and he
the
said
other warriors
it's
coming
not,
in with the boar skins?
Yeah, and it's not man, and it's not animal, and he was confused.
Yeah.
But she knew, you know, San knew that it was a trap, and she was trying to tell him,
mm-hmm.
but he wouldn't listen.
And that was Jiko, or Jigo, whatever you say. his people, his mercenary troop.
With boar heads on and mm-hmm. that whole sad but very moving. But also, you know, like the character trying to say, like, no, that's not the truth. Sort of like a Cassandra type of scene, mm-hmm. trying to help him, but he wouldn't listen. Mm-hmm. So if only he would have listened, you know, kind of like in Harry Potter when, if he would have just gone to Dumbledore. But you know.
Hey, we haven't done that movie yet.
I know.
Bill, what was your favorite part?
You know, I'm torn between a couple of different like very visual sequences that I really loved. What one was the forest spirit kind of descending back to earth early on as he sort of shrinks down from this giant lumbering thing into like the sort of smiling strange deer animal. I really loved that sequence of the giant thing kind of stepping forward and then descending into the world. But the other one that I love every single time I see it, and I've seen it in excerpts from the movie, it's always one of my favorites, is the boars on marching to war. Because there's this great moment where the boars are all there and they're like rubbing in the mud and they're putting on the war paint with their snouts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just this, there's this moment of like, I don't know, it's such a powerful sequence. The boars like getting ready to go on the march and do battle, and it's that one always gets me.
And even though they knew that they were probably going to die, in fact most likely,
the fact that they knew they were going to die is part of what makes it so powerful that they still feel so stirred, and you can see them and they're steeling themselves for it anyway, and they're like putting on their war paint. Getting it's that the juxtaposition of that, those sort of very human impulses and emotions running through them, but then also on this scene of, you know, nature and kind of doing that as animals would. I don't know. I really love the image of it.
Okay.
I agree.
And how about you, Pete?
This is really silly, but my favorite scene is when Yakul's been shot in the haunch.
Oh.
And he keeps trying to follow Ashitaka, and Ashitaka keeps going, no, I told you to stay.
I told you to stay.
And then finally he just gives up and takes him.
Right.
And that's such Ashitaka, you know? I mean, if he could have, he would have put the thing across his shoulders and carried him the rest of the way.
That is true.
You know? Oh. And that's just the relationship between the two of them comes to me, that's the apex of the expression of their relationship right there. Uh-huh. Mm. It was the fact that Yakul loves him so much that he won't leave him behind, and Ashitaka feels the same way.
Aww.
You know, and I think that's wonderful. And they showed it so beautifully. You know, I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful moment. So.
Yeah.
Well, now we have to ask Chris because.
Chris, I had some favorite animation parts.
Okay.
Tell us.
I really liked the way that they drew the samurais that were attacking the Iron Town.
Oh, yeah.
They put a lot of care and detail into that. And I also liked the tour of the ironworks.
Yeah.
Because just like seeing how this whole thing was set up and, mm-hmm. you
and
know, how she took, you know, everybody that doesn't belong anywhere and put them to a purpose, which was, you know, advancing, you know, industry, basically.
Yeah.
It was almost a Marxist society where everybody was doing what they could, you know, for a common end.
Kind of. Mm-hmm. And different from any other movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of unique.
Yeah, so when she was explaining how things worked and when she showed him her secret, you know,
mm-hmm.
that whole sequence there, that was my favorite part.
It's pretty cool.
So are we ready to rate this movie?
Yeah.
Think so.
Okay. Bill, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Princess Mononoke?
Well, I hesitate to mark it down, but I feel like everything taken together, as legendary a Miyazaki film as this is, I'm still only going to give it a 3.
Wow.
I know. Well, it's crazy long. There's 20 bazillion different story elements competing all at once. The problem is there's too much crammed into one space. And the stuff that's really wonderful in the movie has, since 1997, been copied in all kinds of other places.
Indeed.
That now have done it way better. And I feel like all the wonderful things that you get out of Princess Mononoke in, you know, its 2-hour run, you get way better version in, like, you know, 3 episodes of Avatar: The Last Airbender. So it's a tough call to like fully recommend it. It's certainly historic in a lot of ways, and it had a lot of really great innovations to it. But it, you know, if you were just looking for a Miyazaki film to go see, he's got better things out there. There are things that are more visually unique that have remained unique, and he's got better stories that are, you know, worth exploring. And Mononoke is good, but the things that are good in it, you can get better elsewhere. And the best parts of it, to me, is that sort of gray morality of the back and forth between civilization and nature, and that's wonderful. But I'm not sure it's worth the 2 hours that it takes you to get to it.
Okay.
I'm going to ask Chris to see if Chris agrees with your rating.
Okay.
So what do you think?
What do I rate it?
Chris, yeah. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Princess Mononoke?
You know, the things that Bill is saying, so this is my first time seeing it, so I'm not, like, this is not old hat to me. And the things that Bill is saying detract from it, like there's too much going on, there's too many, you know, sides, there's too many, you know, whatever, I think is actually one of its strengths. I think that's solid storytelling where he can make everybody sympathetic. So I'm going to give it a solid 4. And if I come across, if later on I view this in less respect, I will owe you a silver or two. But for now, I'm going to give it 4. Sharon, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Princess Mononoke?
Can I go last because I'm still thinking?
Pete, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Princess Mononoke?
I'm also going to give it a solid 4. And again, I think it deserves that from a balance of things.
Okay.
I think that it is crazy long and that it could be done better in a shorter amount of time. That being said, I'm not sure we would have gotten such incredible visual storytelling if he hadn't taken the time for it. I felt that this was really a labor of love, but Bill makes some valid points in and of the fact that, you know, later things that copied it kind of did it better in a shorthand. Okay. So from that balance, though, I mean, I can't give it a full 5, but I'm not going to go as low as a 3 either, so I think it deserves a 4.
Excellent. All right, Sharon. Okay. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Princess Mononoke?
This is so difficult for me because I really liked the story, but I, you know, being blind, it's almost like I wish I could give it 2 ratings. Does that make sense? Like,
it does make sense.
One as, okay,
but you can't.
Sorry, but I am blind, so it's so hard. It's because. Like,
so what you do is you take your 2 ratings and you take the median of that.
Okay, so if I'm gonna do that, then I would have to
say. I don't think you can take the median of 2.
Well, he means average. He means average it. So. Because
I think you can. So there.
All right. So because I'm blind and I missed all the visuals.
Yes.
I would say a 3, but on the other hand, you know,
on the other hand, I have this demonic corruption.
On the other hand, I loved the story, and it really made me think about the whole environment versus industry and advancement of the human race, but also humanity and morals and stop snoring. Okay, so I'm gonna say 3.5. And usually my ratings are higher.
What just happened there?
What just happened there? Who was that?
It was one of the people in town.
Oh. And usually, I'm always higher than you and Pete.
It was Kuroko.
It's true.
And I have to do this because I couldn't watch it in one sitting. It was just, it was so deep and complex that, and so I guess what Bill said was very true, that it was almost like a little too complicated.
Oh, you kids and your simple stories.
I don't know.
Here, I think you guys should set aside Howl's Moving Castle. Go watch that.
Oh, yeah.
And then Chris can give me the silver that he owes me. And that's how I think you guys need to proceed.
Okay.
Then we will. Who's picking the next movie?
Pete picks
next. That
would
be me.
What are we watching, Pete? What's our next episode?
We are watching one of my absolute favorites from the 1980s.
Awesome.
We are watching Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh.
Excellent.
We have a game that we couldn't play. I think it's Legendary.
Yeah.
Because Legendary. I've never seen Big Trouble in Little China.
You in fact gave that to me for Christmas.
Yeah.
We did?
Yes, we did.
Well, great. Yeah. Glad we're so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Bill, you want to come back for that one?
I don't know how I could turn down Big Trouble in Little China. That's one of my all-time favorites.
I thought that might pull your ear. And since you're doing three shows in a row, you get to pick one if you want.
I'll have to think about it. Then.
Okay.
Yeah, please do.
Oh, were we going to give away...
Oh, we said last week we were going to have a contest, or last episode we were going to have a contest this episode.
So, and I have a book.
And so Bill's got a book. So here's the contest. We want people to submit their idea for our closing tagline. And whichever one we use, we are going to give that person a copy of Gedlund by William Ray.
Ooh.
So, like, they have to come up with our...
with our closing tagline, and we will use it.
Like, have fun storm in the castle.
Right.
They can't
yeah,
that
kind of thing.
Now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So how's that sound?
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Bill, can you send internationally?
I can. It'll be tougher to... it'll be easier if I can... Yeah, I can send it internationally.
Okay, then,
cool.
Then we can open this to people outside the United States?
Let's do it, sure.
Okay.
All right, cool.
Then join us next time when we will be talking about Big Trouble in Little China. And until then, remain awesome.
See, that's why we need. That's why we need a line.
That's exactly what we need a tagline.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and/or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon, and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.